Welcome to the Port Charles Update with your hosts, Mish and Mel.
Hi.
Hello. How are you?
I am delightful. Are you ready to get into this whole Quartermain shindig and all of its rooms?
Oh my gosh, I'm so ready. They have like a time machine capsule room. I don't even know what to call it.
But do you notice that this room that's existed, they always make sure that the only access to it that they show is people coming from the back? Because the whole thing is that the main doors open into the old entrance.
It's a mystery. I'm glad that they're able to get in and out of it, but there's a lot of secret activity happening surrounding that room.
Go on.
Chase found a new BFF named Austin.
Don't you find that duo strange? Like, it's just different. It's different. You know what I mean? Like, because they started pointing to like an Austin Dante duo, and it was like, oh, okay, cool. But Austin Chase, this is interesting.
Right. It was very unexpected, but it's like Austin has been looking for that little nugget, that little tidbit. Like, he keeps saying he's a Quartermain, and Quartermains cause trouble and they plot and they just do all of this stuff. And he's like, I found my in.
Yeah. Like, I guess he needs another, you know, outsider to learn about the inside of stuff. But he's also like, it's everything about Austin is like suspicious, right?
Right.
He is suspicious of everyone, but like, I'm also suspicious of him. Like, he acts suspicious. Right? Because he's all like, oh, you're walking, like super suspicious of Chase for like secretly walking. And I'm like, well, if you were spying correctly, you would see he wasn't super good at it. Like, I mean, right? Like, it's not like he was doing jumping jacks. He was taking a step or two.
Right, and that's fair. But now it's like, oh, I have this guy's secret. How are we going to maneuver this situation? What can he get out of this situation? And I really do think he's looking for, like, a buddy or a friend, even though it comes off weird.
Because at first, that's exactly what it looked like. Is he going to use this to his advantage? But that's the thing about Chase, right? Chase is squeaky clean. So if you confront Chase will be like, no, I'll tell you all of the things with all of my honesty, you know, and all of my intentions. Whether it's none of your business or not, that's how Chase handles somebody, you know, accusing him of something. So as we've mentioned, Chase took a couple of steps, but later we see that he could do more than that for longer periods upright. Okay. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So last week, Willow opens the door. Her mom shows up.
Okay. Her shady ASS mom shows up.
What? Like, I'm sorry. Like, what's in your mind brain? Like, what? Like, I felt like it was all just so selfish.
Oh, 100%. I was like, oh, third grandma. This is like Nina part two. She has no idea like when the right time is to do things.
She like tries to explain herself. Like, I just figured you'd be more open to forgiveness on Wiley's third birthday.
Third birthday. I don't know how many times I heard that.
Like, on his third birthday, Willow would suddenly be inclined to be like, you know what? It's not a big deal that you told Shiloh about my baby. It's not a big deal that I had to like hide it, go to court, spend some time in jail. It's not, you know, it's not a big deal that I was afraid. So there's everything with Wiley, and then there's everything else. Like, you shoved her to Shiloh. You brought her into a cult. The girl was raped because of you. And on that day, you're like, you know, I think Willow will be over it. I think this joyous day. Oh my gosh, it was just ridiculous. Like, I mean, it was like, to be honest, Harmony's visit made me realize the heaviness that once was Willow, that still is Willow. Because, you know, for a long time, all we've got from Willow was like, I'm going to go check on Wiley. And this back and forth between like Chase and Michael, we've had that for a long time, that we kind of forgot that there was a lot of complexity that does come with Willow. Like, she has quite a past, you know, she has like all that friction between her, Nina, and Valentine. And it almost made me forget they're all living together. And, you know, especially when Valentine was asking for, like, info on the whole Harmony situation.
Yes.
Right? And to me, I was like, oh, wow, like this is really taking us back a little bit because, you know, Valentine didn't always like Willow. I'm sure things are obviously different just on its own. They all live in the same place. Everybody is in a different place. Also, mm-hmm. Nina's not present and that, you know, is a huge thing too. But I think it was just interesting because I could see Valentine's mind working and being like, oh, wow, I didn't know that. Like I felt him flashing between the Willow he's come to know and just layering that with all the stuff he didn't know and trying to make sense of it.
I know, and I love seeing that side of Valentine, his growth and just how he absorbed that information and just the fact that him and Carly were talking. Like, I love that. Like, I'm just straying away from Harmony for a second. But yes, I don't understand why she thought that was the perfect timing. Like, and she had nothing to offer in terms of, if you're coming, there has to be this grand gesture of apology. There has to be something more than I'm showing up with a gift.
Yeah, I just want to be included, be part of the fam. I heard it was his birthday.
Exactly. I just didn't understand full on her actions and intentions if she genuinely wants a relationship with Willow. Like, that wasn't it. Like, I don't know what that was.
Part of me was getting a little bit like feeling sorry for her when she started talking about she's trying and she wants to be better. And, you know, there was this whole conversation that was happening in the other room about redemption or making things right and how it was up to Willow to determine if it was enough. So there was a split second where I almost felt for Harmony, like she's just trying to make things right. But then it hit me like, okay, wait. If you want a road back to Willow, you also mm-hmm. need to be prepared for her to shut the door in your face 50 times over before mm-hmm. she feels a little bit more comfortable. So there is that reality too. You want to make things right. You want to build a bridge. And this is way too much, too fast, right? You could have baby stepped that. And I think that Harmony needs to understand that on this road, she needs to be prepared and open for that rejection for a while, right? And so that to me, I think is what rubbed me the wrong way about like the whole thing. Okay. They've been doing a lot of recaps on the show lately.
Yes.
A lot of recaps. And one of the biggest ones was like the tag team relays of like Carly / Jason saying stuff. And it was just bizarre. Like, since when does Jason jump in and is so forthcoming with all of these details?
Right.
And I love how Valentine had no idea, because like DOD was a huge storyline, right? For so long, it invaded every damn story on General Hospital. I love how Valentine was like, nope, Soup's unaware of the whole cult thing that happened. Like, how that's humanly possible, I have no idea. But yeah, so that was really interesting to me. And I have to say, I love it. Like, Carly started this connection with Valentine ages ago when they were trying mm-hmm. to take down Peter. But I don't know. It's really cool. It's really cool watching conversations occur with like Monica, Jason, Carly, Valentine, not to mention just the whole Carly, Valentine, Brooklyn, right? Because Brooklyn and Carly are familiar. They're friends. They know each other. So, I mean, I like it. It's really, really interesting watching this combination of people.
I absolutely love when all of these characters kind of come together and we want to see Carly at the Quartermaids. Like, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. And one of my favorite parts was when I think it was Brooklyn is like looking like, oh yeah, I did hear about your engagement. Congratulations. And she's like, oh, you, or was it Valentine that asked if they were going to have a baby, and Carly's face just got like so gross. Like, why on earth did you ask me that?
That's the thing. Like, they're so funny. Like, they're so funny, all of those three people together. And that's the thing, though. We need to see more Quartermaine. And I just, like, it has occurred to me that this is a business arrangement. So to make it more real, there has to be more family events, right? It has to be sold. Carly has to be seen. Like, they both have to be seen intermingling and creating a new circle.
Yes, I love it so much. Like, and even when that moment when Monica's like, Carly, I need to talk to you. And she's all like, oh, crap. Why did you want to pull me away from here?
I think it's so funny, right? It echoes the time where Jason went to talk to Monica. And she's like, oh, no, I'm not actually coming in there with you. Like, it's just like that whole thing I find really funny. And Monica was utterly like sweet, you know, recognizing that Carly is not the same person and there was a lot of hurt. And I think just having the respect to be able to acknowledge that and to move forward. So again, like, I'm really taking this as hope for more Quartermain scenes, more Monica, please, more Monica and Carly scenes. Like, I just want her in the house more. I think it would be so interesting, right? Because, you know, Carly has the pull to the Quartermain house for Wiley, Willow, and Michael. And I think the hope maybe for Monica is that more Carly is more Jason.
Exactly. And I love all of that because, and I think we discussed this last week too, like, we saw them at the party briefly, Carly and Jason, but we need to see more of them interacting as a couple.
Yeah.
Like, I thought we would see a little bit more of that at the party.
Me too. I really did. Cause I'm like, where are you going? Cause like, that's right? The thing. Like, this is also why I'm interested going forward, because if you go back to when Sunny was there, if there were special holidays or events, remember Michael had to split his time between Sunny's house and the Quartermains.
Right.
You know, Jason as well. And so this is really interesting because technically it can all go down at the Quartermains now. Like, if Carly and Jason are together, there is no reason to be having double the holidays.
Oh my God. I love it. I love it so much.
Because we saw Joss is obviously perfectly welcome there. You know, she was at the Quartermains when the whole Oscar thing went down. You know, they love Joss. She's part of the extended family, you know. So I just think it'll be really, really interesting, I think, moving forward, just socially at the Quartermains. It's definitely going to get busier. Like, you know what I mean? For years, the house was so scarce and they weren't really featured a lot and there weren't many people living there. So, like, I'm very excited to see this kind of life back into the Quartermain house.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so talking about life in the Quartermain house, we got to see Chase get a little, like, mad and protect my lady in front of Harmony type situation. And
yes! What did you think about the contrast of how Chase approached the situation compared to Michael?
I think it was just, you know, setting that storyline that Chase is going to a dark, angry place, but his version of it, whereas Michael's the calm, level-headed person that he always is.
Okay, that's interesting that it is a clue to sort of this angriness that might emerge more with Chase. And I mean, look, I think we all can see that Austin is there to help that along. Like, if anybody needs coaching on how to just be not nice all the time, like, Chase is going to need that type of assistance for sure.
You know, real quick, Chase finds out what's going on. Austin's like, take a breath and game this out.
Yes, exactly. So I just feel like that's exactly the thing. You know, I think Austin is going to get him to think in a more calculating way. But just real quick, between like Chase and Michael, I also think it speaks to, yes, there's the anger, there's their personality. But it's hard to make one a villain because they're all really good people, like all of them, right? It's just the situation ultimately. But it also speaks to where Willow is right now. Right? Like, Willow doesn't want or need people speaking for her.
Yes.
And sure. Chase kind of walked in making decisions for her. And that's also kind of what annoyed her, was while they won Wiley out of what Chase did, she was annoyed that that decision was made for her, that she didn't get to choose what she wanted out of that. And Michael is sort of there to allow her to feel uncomfortable and to feel hurt and to feel pain, and just leaves her with it. He's there to support her, but he gives her room to kind of react to it as she pleases.
Well, that's really interesting because it kind of brings me to the beginning of Chase's relationship with Willow, when she was that person that needed more tender love and care and somebody to stand up for her because she was still finding her footing in the world after everything that had gone on. So he's still stuck in time where she's moved on leaps and bounds from that person.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. That could not be a better description of what is happening in their relationship. So, I mean, Willow is so upset. She runs off to wrap non-existent presents. Okay. And she leaves, and, you know, seeing as how Chase is like, oh, I can't. Michael's like, don't worry, stay here, bye. I got this. And he runs off. Were you shocked that Chase actually found out that this wasn't like a near close call, but that it went down?
Yes, because I was like, no. He's really putting it together, like, in the inside of his throat. Like, Austin picks up the shirt, like, such an a-hole, just like, oh, look, here's the shirt, and then finds the condom wrapper. Oh, look, at least they were safe. I was like, stop, like, talking.
Right? So, like, the shirt, the belt, And and then being like, oh, well, Michael was wearing that shirt moments ago. Do you think it got stained? Like, immediately he got upset, and immediately he knew. And this made me laugh so much. So PT Moxie wrote, how big is the gatehouse that they didn't hear him yelling her name? And I just kept thinking, well, sometimes when you're having orgasms, it can obstruct hearing, is what I was kind of going. like they were just on another planet. But like, that's a lot of time spent there. You know what I mean?
Dude.
Because their love scene went on and on. Like, they showed multiple positions. Meanwhile, yes. Chase is at the doorway being like, Willow, you there?
Like, right? They're proclaiming their love to each other. And they downstairs are like, trying to get to, it's not funny, but he's like trying to like stumble his way to the stairs. But he's dying. Because I'm like, I can't believe this is actually happening. And then I thought about a conversation we had, oh my gosh, I think this was maybe a month and a half ago, where we're like, they're this like underlying story, like they're their own little tiny soap opera that just scratches the surface of all the bigger stories that's going on. So it's so interesting, that whole like, you know, good and bad guy, but exactly that, there's no real bad guy, just a really, really terrible situation.
It's just drama light, basically, which is why I'm here for it, because people are gonna get hurt, but look, nobody's getting dramatically hurt, okay? Like, I'm sorry. You can come back from, let's say, having your heart broken over somebody you knew deep down was never interested in you in the first place. Yes. Like, let's not pretend that Chase somewhere deep down didn't realize that. Chase was just fixated on what he wanted. He wanted to get back a little bit of what he lost. You know what I mean? Like, he wanted to know that good guys win. I made a sacrifice and I got rewarded for it. This is the world he lives in. A fantasy fairy tale land is where Chase lives. And he wanted to know that he lives in a just world and that everything will just be just right.
Oh my God. Okay. So I don't want to give away another one of my favorite lines, but I'm going to do it anyways because we're right in the scene. So exactly that. He's like, he's going through all these feelings, you know, debating going up the stairs. And not only are Michael and Willow proclaiming their love to each other, they're discussing how they got into the situation in the first place. And then Michael goes to Willow. You tried to tell him, but then he collapsed. And then you thought he was dead. I kind of wish he heard that part.
That's really funny, actually. Like, it's really, because they're having a serious conversation. Yeah. Because, like, I was in it, you know? I'm like, yeah, all that happened. But, like, yeah, in hindsight, that sounds so ridiculous, you know? Because she did try. And Chase made it impossible. Like, how many times did he tell her, like, if it wasn't for you, I would just let go and just die right now? I would just stop living. Like, that's literally the kind of pressure this girl was under. So, okay, for me, I know you said, like, he was trying to stumble his way up. But to me, I was like, for a guy who can't walk, that is excellent, because you claimed you can barely take a step, and here you are standing for the length of this conversation and trying to get yourself up the stairs. And Austin kept saying, no, you're gonna hurt yourself, you're gonna set yourself back. So they're like having this massive debate.
Oh yeah.
Okay, but then I'm like, what was the point of that debate if Austin is gonna let him go up the stairs after the fact to just
so two things. I'm like, maybe Austin carried him up the stairs. And then the second part was when Chase was like, I need to see it with my own eyes. And I was thinking, like, what if they made the bed and left the room so spotless and impeccable that he'd be like, oh, I guess she was just getting the tape with Michael and he lost his shirt on the way upstairs. Like, I was like, what does it have to do with seeing it? But then when they put the condom wrapper, I just giggled. But I'm like, I need to see the room.
I was just like, if you wanted proof, what you could have done was walk out of the kitchen. Like, that's also something you could have done, was that you could have just sat on the couch and waited
and said, like, aha.
And be like, hey, Michael, here's your shirt. Do you always take it off to wrap gifts? Like, you could have done something cool, but you obviously decided to take, you know, a step back, which tells me like, you don't want to know, no, you want to know, but you don't necessarily want things to change right now.
He wants to plot it out. Remember I said he's going to like do the whole fake.
Yes. But that came later. Right. Yes, so in the moment where he was like, he kept saying, he was so determined. I want to know the truth. And I'm like, you're full of crap because you couldn't just stay put if you wanted all of those things. So again, this is just Chase continuing to lie to himself.
Good point. Very good point.
So when Chase was up in the room with Austin, I was looking at this and I'm thinking, well, Chase is actually spot on. Mm-hmm. Michael and Willow are both not horrible people. If Michael slept, like, that's correct. You know, it's correct that Willow wouldn't just have a fling if she's sleeping with Michael. She's in love with him. Ding, ding, ding. And if Michael would do this to his friend, he wouldn't do this lightly, and it means like there's something real and mutual happening. That's also something he failed to kind of acknowledge. They're together. They're together. They're a family. They're together. And so all of that was true. And then you have Austin being like, well, maybe you don't know them as well as you think you do. And I'm like, well, what is that even supposed to mean? You know, they don't have to love each other to do this to hurt you. It's like, there's where you don't know what you're talking about. And here is where Chase, like, that's the part that I don't like, is like, Chase, you know better. What you're saying is true. It's not an easy truth, but you're not wrong.
And that's the interesting part, that he's, you know, Austin's pushing him into this like dark place, trying to get him to plot and take a step back and get his woman and all of that jazz. But we also know Austin's father's history, that he like kidnapped his wife. And there's like a whole bunch of crappy, weird things that happened in Austin's past with his family.
I mean, hopefully Chase doesn't take it that far, but I don't hate the fact that Chase will get into a little bit of plotting, because that's the thing about Chase. He's been so squeaky clean, right? The only lie he's ever told was truly a sacrifice.
Yes.
It wasn't a real lie. It wasn't a lie coming from like a selfish place. And this is going to be that one time where Chase is going to like do human stuff that all other humans do on the show, right? They make mistakes. They lie. They try to get what they want. You know, they don't necessarily want to hurt people, but they just kind of lose it for a sec.
And I think this is the point where Brooklyn is going to catch on, or, you know, catch him in a moment or something like that. And she's going to bring him back and remind him of who he was, and that's going to bond them together. For the growth of Chase's character, him experiencing this and Brooklyn catching him and reminding him of who he is humanizes him more, because we do call him like the little puppy. He has this ideal, perfect world, but now he's truly being affected by certain things. I mean, the first one was, you know, is he my father? Is he not my father? It doesn't matter. This is love. That was the first big thing. And then now there's this whole situation. And then when Brooklyn's situation comes to light, she made the decision for the greater good, but it still affected and hurt a lot of people. And he will be able to understand that and see her point of view far more real than he would have before.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. Love the way you said that. I think that's exactly it. And that's why you think the story is kind of important, right? Like, I understand it's frustrating. Why can't Willow or Michael just be together? Or why can't everyone stop lying? But like, if anything comes out of this story, I think it's a lot about Chase too, right? I think this whole story gives Chase room to grow.
Well, it's so funny you say that, because I was just listening to That's So Awesome podcast, and Laura Wright, who plays Carly, was on it, and they were doing a live interview in front of like an audience for the first time in a long time. And she said exactly that, like, who wants to see happy people all the time? She loves this whole storyline with Jason because it allows them to try new things, and it develops the character, and it's just like, she wants to see the long-winded story. She doesn't want Sunny to come back just yet, like her Laura Wright. She wants to see how the story is going to write out, because if not, under any other circumstances, this would not work.
Exactly what we've been saying,
right?
You know, you and I, when we watch it, we're along for the ride, and I think it's about like being open and curious. And I get that it sucks, you know, like when your couple isn't together or stuff like that, but I feel like if you're able to just be open to seeing what happens, it makes it more enjoyable. Because I remember when I was younger and I used to watch, I have to admit, I'd watch for like one specific storyline, and I get really irritated and fixated on the outcome, like, why won't this happen? And now when I watch it, I find it so not like that. Like, I know something is going to take a while, and I'm cool with it, and I'm into watching all the silliness in between. It
creates that balance for me for when like I watch something on Netflix and binge watch, and then my GH is like, this is like a slow pace, I want to see Chase's character develop, like, I'm here for it, I'm all for it. And then I have my other avenue where I can just like have those stories happen quickly.
No, I totally get that. But the thing is, it is a huge change. Like, it definitely is. Like, there is a huge shakeup in all the stories, all the dynamics. But I'm super curious. And that's what's like really exciting for me, is that I'm watching, you know, characters interact that normally wouldn't, you know, like a lot is happening that otherwise wouldn't be possible, specifically with Lulu gone, with, you know, Franco not there, and with Sunny not mm-hmm. there. Like, you know, having those characters absent, it has allowed for other things to kind of come out of it. So it is interesting for me anyways to watch.
Oh my God, absolutely. And with all that party situation, I'm really, really glad that we finally did actually get to see Wiley, and that they got to sing him happy birthday and he got cake. Like, it was so cute.
Oh, it was really fun watching it because he was playing with a rocket that Logan has. I got that for Logan for like his birthday. So I thought that was really cool to see for sure. Also, Wiley got a visit from Joss and Cam.
That was so funny.
Oh my gosh. So I have to say, like, I love the dynamic. Well, I kind of do. I like it when it's funny, the dynamic with Spencer, but sometimes Spencer pushes it way too damn far and it's just annoying, yes. Because mm-hmm. they're really pulling on old Spencer, because when they used to put Cam, Joss, and Spencer in scenes together when they were kids, it was a lot of that towny stuff and it was a lot of that status stuff.
Yes.
And even young Spencer had a lot of talking to. Even his mom came back from the dead to talk to him about like status and stop making people feel bad, you yes. know, for not having money, because I was a townie. So I think a lot of that is just playing and pulling on old dynamics for sure. But I just love that specific banter where Spencer was trying to psych Cameron out. Mm-hmm. About like, you know, visiting her family and now being the boyfriend, not the friend. And I loved all of that, making fun of him, like, oh no, Cam, they're gonna call you by your whole name. And I just thought that was hilarious, because in the end, Carly did just that. She called him she did say hello, Cameron, instead of Cam. So anyways, that whole thing was really, really funny. And I love how like Carly just has the conversation with Monica, and then she has to kind of do that to Cam.
I know. I kind of loved it, the whole generational thing. And I was so happy about Cam and the way he represented himself and wanted to talk about his intentions and his integrity in this relationship.
I was like, oh my gosh, you're so adorable for doing that. But it was very sweet seeing Cam and Joss together like that, right? There's so much history there. So like, it's a huge family coming together, the Webbers and all of Carly.
I love that. Okay, so getting to Joss and Cam, just kind of rewinding a little bit. When she walks into his work, there's a few different situations that happened this week that I'm still trying to piece together what it means.
Okay.
So she goes into his work and she's like, oh, you're still working. So we're getting that still that taste of like world mm-hmm. revolves around me. And then mm-hmm. Spencer comes in with the world revolving around him. So I'm like, okay, are mm-hmm. these little clues about some shakeup? Then when they go to the hospital, don't you find that Joss was using that like Nina new human voice to talk about Cam and to Cam in front of Curtis and Jordan? Like, it was very weird and uncomfortable.
I didn't notice that. I was more taken with Cam, actually, in that scene where he talks to Curtis and Portia. First of all, like, it was like, you're taking Joss and Cam out of their regular people, right?
Yes.
But the funny thing is, they've already slowly started to make links to from Cam to Curtis and Cam to TJ ages ago, yes, when he was at the bar, okay? So that okay. link between Cameron and the Ashfords, along with Trina and Portia, has started like a while ago.
Oh, and absolutely.
Based on what you said, it sounds like Cam fits more and Joss was acting odd, and maybe Joss sort of stands out in those scenes. Mm-hmm. That could be that. But what I found was interesting is because of the highlight of Cameron's medical knowledge.
Yes.
From okay. his mom. Mm-hmm. And to me, that kind of stood out a lot because he's already following his mom's footsteps, right? The mm-hmm. friend group, you know, he's echoing a lot of Elizabeth's history. The friend group, the job at Kelly's, the medical knowledge. And I just wondered what that meant for his future. Are we seeing a future nurse on our hands? Are we seeing a doctor? And then as we continue to watch the show, it kind of brings me back to a question I've posed you know, on and off during our podcast about Cam's future and his connection to Jason. And then I couldn't help but notice the mirroring between Jason and Cam. Both of them were two people caught between, you know, a life in the medical field and the mob.
Yes, that is accurate. And so then there was that moment, which you worded perfectly. And I think that's what I was seeing, but I just couldn't put words to. And then when she goes back to Kelly's with him to go to work, she says to him, well, she sits on the bench for like 2 seconds. And she's like, well, I guess I'm going to leave now because you're still working. It's like the fact that she emphasized that he couldn't, it was almost like you can't pay attention to me right now. So I'm only going to sit here for like 1 minute. I'm not going to like order a tea and sit here for a beat. I'm just going to like peace out. I just thought it was really interesting to show like how is her character, like legit they grew up together and that's wonderful. But her character is so different from his and his values and the way he sees things. Like how is this actually going to work out? So I can't wait to see how that's going to kind of work.
Well, that's the thing, you know, I mean, look, they're friends, but I do think things change when you get a little bit closer and when you're in a relationship. And look, from the moment Spencer showed up, you know, and the way he showed up when it comes to Joss and Spencer, like, you know, winking at her when they first saw each other, you know, the way Carly stared at Joss when she bickers with Spencer.
Oh my God, right? Even the mention of Joss saying to Cam about, you know, this is family business, I'll take care of it when Joey Novak was there.
Like, we need to slow down on that, okay? Because when Joss said that, my mouth dropped to the floor. Mm-hmm. I was so taken aback by that, okay? First of all, Joey Novak is such a twit. I was like, you again? Yeah. And so when I was watching that, you know, I was like, oh, wow, look at Joss. You know, I love how she's handling that. You know, I love how she kind of used his Jason threat back at him.
Yes.
But when he left and Cam was really upset and Cam was like, should I come with you? And when she turned around and said that, I was shocked. I was so shocked, you know, because because like when we talk about like the future of the mob, we've joked about certain things, you know, yes, like Christina taking over, this taking over. And I think we've thrown Joss in there in the past, but I know we've had conversations specifically when everyone thought Taggart was dead at the funeral, yes, of like just a general conversation. Like the mob is a big part of General Hospital and Port Charles. And, you know, we know what side Trina falls on. Yes. And during that whole Taggart thing and the whole kidnapping, it was really clear where Joss fell and where Trina and Cam fell, because they were very much on the same side. They were very much going through a lot of trauma from, yes, that whole event. And so there's always that question of down the line, who falls where? Who's going to lean more into the life and who out? But man, I just with the it's family business. What? Like, right? Just hear Joss. And like another thing that really strikes me is that I love how Britt points this out about Jax. Like when Jax tries to give his like, oh, this is my analysis of like Jason and Carly and the mob. She's like, you don't know them all that well, do you? Like that's come up before that he's wrong about a lot of things. And even when it comes to the mob, like when he was having that back and forth with Carly, like you're true to this, you want to be there. It shows that he doesn't get the life at all. And right? I'm watching this and I couldn't help but think about, you know, Britt saying those things to him, because Britt's known Jason a lot less long and Carly, and she puts together the dynamic a lot better than he did. And watching Joss and watching Jax, particularly today, I just kept thinking, wow, like after all these years, Jax legit does not know how the mob works. And here Joss is, she gets it. Like she actually gets it.
Yes. Like she plays innocent. She plays like she doesn't know, but she's obviously grown up in the life and she knows things. And it was just so interesting to see how that played out. And then the next part to that conversation, like how she was just calm and speaking to her mom and the lightness in talking about, you know, which bodyguard she gets, that she wants Devin because he's like better or stays back. And I just thought that was so normal, you know?
It was very cool. Like, I know it's not the safest, but it was very cool to watch Joss and Carly have this conversation. You know, we saw Carly can handle herself. We're watching Joss being able to handle herself. And then you hear the hysterics of Jax. What is happening? What is happening here? And the fact that he still doesn't understand what Carly means, but she's like, I'm keeping my family safe, and just pointing out that there wasn't an option.
Exactly.
There is no option out of this, you know? Okay. I'm mentioning power again because one, I've been losing a lot of sleep over this because Donnie and I are watching it, but we're also watching it through like a 1 month free subscription somewhere. So we're trying to get through all six seasons and we can't help it. Like, no joke. Every night we're like, okay, one more. No. Like, we cannot stop watching. And every night I go to bed so late as a result. Also in the past week, I finished Good Girls. I'm so sad they had the series finale, and it's also related to mob life.
Okay.
And crime. And so having finished Good Girls and having, like, watching Power, and I like, just, like, a warning, like, Power can be very, like, graphic, extremely graphic. There is a lot of, like, covering of my eyes. And so when you go in order, it's like you have Power, which is very graphic. Then you have Good Girls, which has some dark parts, too, where you're like, oh, my gosh, that just happened. And then you have General Hospital, who does the whole mob storyline. And I realized they do it accurately, just not as dark. And so by watching Good Girls, watching Power, it made me go, okay, I get it now. Like, I get it now. Like, it's really dangerous. Like, watching Power, you watch how, when they say, like, you're in this life, that's your whole life. Like, your whole life is either about staying alive and not getting arrested. And getting killed is something that is very likely to happen at any point in time within your organization, depending on your missteps.
Right.
And so, like, there is no getting out. Like, I've watched Good Girls every time they try to get out. Like, you know what I mean? I'm watching Power. It just makes me understand, like, a lot more. Like, it makes me understand the commitment to the life, that it's just necessary. It's just very actually necessary. And it makes me understand Jason. I think I said this last time, too. You know, it made me understand, like, why he does what he does. Because, like, that is the life, and everything else is just sort of temporary. So anybody you do meet, it's all temporary. It really truly is, because the thing that comes front and center is the life. And the only thing that makes it work is that Carly knows how to make it work. And when I watch Power, the interesting thing is there is a character in the show that is a Carly. She's,
oh, really?
She's with the life, you know? I mean, not exactly that, but representing the same thing, a woman who is in the life, not trying to change it, but just in it. In it and surviving it and knows how it works. And then you have another woman on the show that very much reminds me of Brenda.
Really?
Who wants, you know, doesn't want to accept that part of that person and wants the fantasy. And I was laughing and I thought of you specifically because in the show for a very, there's a lot of lies, a lot of deceit. It's really a great show, but there's a point where to the Brenda character, the man she's with, so I guess Sunny, you could say, says to this person, do you really trust your 15-year-old self to make decisions for the rest of your life? Because they knew each other way back in the day and then sort of reconnected.
I love that so much.
And, like, it's just interesting watching because, like, that's just the reality. Like, you're in the life. Sometimes you want things, like, from your past, or you want this person because it feels good. But at the end of the day, that only gets in the way and it only creates a vulnerability and it can ultimately get you killed and take down your whole thing. And watching Power makes you see that, that trying to indulge in anything that makes you kind of happy, that is sort of very not about the life, can literally put everything in danger. Your entire organization, your entire family, your life, like everything. It really put it into perspective as to why it is the way that it is in General Hospital, and that General Hospital follows all of the basic mob rules. But watching it in such a dark graphic way cements that so much more, where you're like, oh, wow, yeah, that's why they're doing what they're doing. And that's why Jason can do what he's doing with Britt.
Yes. And we kind of, you know, like, we understand this, we know this, and it's just really interesting to see Jax's perspective on it. He is stuck. He is his 15-year-old self. You know, the fact that he called Joss my daughter instead of our daughter, I wanted to smack him. Like, I just couldn't handle his, he knows everything when he really, really doesn't. And the funniest part of it all was that at the first mention of Devin being the bodyguard and that he was going to follow Joss around in college, he was like, oh, I guess there are perks to this life.
Yeah, like Joss is really special and he's also losing whatever power he has. Look, when Joss was younger, he did have that leverage, right? And Carly had something to fear that he could, you know, with justifiable reason, take Joss. Yes. But now he could whine and moan to Carly all he wants. But we already saw how this went. When he tried to bring it up with Jocelyn about staying with him, he's like, no. She's like, no. Nope.
I'm good.
So it's like now, like he can whine all he wants. But I think that the reality is, in order to kind of maintain safety and have things go smoothly, Carly will have to indulge whatever he says to her, because in reality he has no power. So she's just trying to make him feel good about himself, because at the end of the day, it's Joss's choice. She's old enough, and she's also old enough to tell Jax to leave her alone, and I think he knows that.
And okay, so that's very interesting what you're saying, the whole like letting him be hurt. So you have so many scenes, it felt like, with Carly and Jax just going on and on and on. And then at the end of it all, Jason walks in. They barely have two words to each other. Him and Carly give each other a look. There's like less than 10 words that pass between them. And then they go and solve whatever needs to be solved. Like, so simpatico in comparison to Jax, who's like, I don't know what he is.
I know, but what's he doing? Like, is a theme of Friday being like a creepster? Like, he spied on Joss and Carly's conversation, and then he stayed back. Like, what are you gonna do? Like, what are you gonna do? Follow Carly and Jason to wherever they're going? Like, I'm scared because I don't know where Jason and Carly's going. But I know if it's mob related, like, Jax is gonna mess it up. Like, what's your plan? Because I know you said that Jax was like, oh, there's perks to this, but when he had a change in tune, it made me think he had, like, what just happened? You went like from angry, angry, and then you were super fine. What's your plan here, genius? What's your plan?
So I think the thing is, and I could be totally wrong, it's that he's going to misstep in this situation, of course, or he's going to step in something, and then Jason is going to ultimately have to like save his life to some extent, and then Jax will have to be grateful to Jason no matter what.
I'm good with that, but I also feel like this is what happens when he doesn't have a girlfriend. Like,
apparently
like his fallback is, if I don't have a girlfriend, I'm gonna obsess over everything Carly does. And but we've been over like when he tells Britt, oh man, Carly, I don't care, we've been over longer than we've been together, but I just can't stop and won't stop.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I'm like, dude, come on, what are you doing? Don't you have a company to run?
Oh my gosh, he's pulling a Valentine right now, like old Valentine. Yes. Yeah, But I hate to admit this, but Jax had one of my favorite lines. The happy couple wants to whisper sweet battle plans into each other's ears.
Yes, like, I'm gonna cross it off good. My list right now.
I'm like, he's such a doofus. He knows nothing about the mob. Like, I just can't. But anyways, but that line, though, I was like, you kind of saved yourself for me when it comes to that whole thing.
I know. Okay, just talking about, like, fun things to say. I loved it when Ava referred to Carly as the Bella Mafia.
Me too. I don't know why, but I absolutely loved it. I love hearing Ava's take on, like, the mob situation. And I could not be more in love with her interaction with Sean,
right?
I was like, you better watch out, because if Sean is your bodyguard, the last time he was someone's bodyguard, they hooked up, because he was Carly's bodyguard.
Oh my god.
Right?
Oh
my gosh. He was her body. Like, Jason had him protect Carly and Joss. And yes. Here he would be doing a very similar deed to, like, Ava, you know, slash Avery. Like, I want to see that happen. Their banter could not have been more magical. Like, when she says, as I live and breathe, he's like, nice to see you still doing both those things, despite the efforts of many. Like, it was so good. And then when he talked about, like, wanting to get his own place, I was so curious to see if Ava has some kind of suggestion. Like, would she house him in an apartment in, like, the building she's in? Like, what would she do? Would he, you know, would Nina be gone and he stay there? Like, what would happen? Like, I kind of want to see him be her bodyguard. You cannot tease us with that and then take it away.
I 100% agree. And she kind of, okay, so two things. She, when she's like kind of batted her eyelashes at him and they kind of giggled together, I felt like that was more of like a Mora West move than an Ava move, but I absolutely love their chemistry. Like, I'm almost wondering if they're friends in real life. And then, so there's all that, the bodyguard clue. And then she wants to know his relationship status.
Right? She was really explicit about that. You know, look, that was definitely more than a recap, more so exactly what you just said, checking his status. But I loved how she poked around to find out if there was anything lingering between him and Jordan, because that's what she last remembered. I'm totally going to be like taking a deep dive this weekend into some old Sean Ava clips. I don't remember. Like, they obviously clarified that, you know, I didn't think you liked me. So I'm like, okay, all right. Cool. Okay. So there was that. That was the dynamic, I guess. But like, I don't know. I don't remember. So I'm going to have to go back and see if I can find some scenes with the two of them to see what their history was like. But that's also what I love, though. That's also what I loved when Ava and Sean sat down together. It was just the echo of the past. Like, I really like that. You know, Sean was a big character on the show for such a long time. And it was huge. You know, he was planning on leaving the show and to exit. Like, when he exited the show, the big exit was, I'm going to jail for Sunny. That's huge. That's heavy. And yeah. So I don't know. I love that conversation for so many reasons, but really just the nod to the history.
Oh my God, 100%. If we take it a little further into the Metro Court, what'd you think about that conversation with Sasha and Brooklyn?
Oh, my heart broke for Brooklyn. Like, I was devastated for her. I totally know what that's like when things are like amazing at work and then out of nowhere something just ruins it and you're like, why? And like, it's depressing and it's hard. Like, she was like loving her job, and then and then Gladys does her Gladys thing. I mean, I like all the connections though, right? Like the Corbin connection, Sasha brought up, like Mike, she brought up Sunny. But Brooklyn is smart, and clearly she's plotting already, you know, in terms of how do I make this work? So, you know, rather than like whining, she immediately accepts the situation and she's prepared to handle it. She's definitely a fixer, definitely a fixer. So she seems to have a way, like she's going to figure out a way to make it work with Gladys, but I'm scared. Mm-hmm. Because Gladys is obviously like a roadblock to everyone's life. And she's like a potential obstacle, a potential problem. And the fact that she was asking, you know, Brooklyn about her daughter, you know, I feel like, what is she going to find out? What is she going to do? You're just scared. Like, wherever Gladys is, I am just afraid for everybody around her that, you know, she's out for herself, but she ends up creating more harm than good.
Oh my God, 100%. So like when that whole situation started with Sasha and Brooklyn, I kind of giggled, but then I did, you know, feel bad. But it also shows a different side, not a different side, but the side that we see that her family doesn't always get to see, that exactly that. She is a fixer. She cares about Sasha an awful lot, that she is willing to bite the bullet with Gladys and make that work for Sasha's sake, for her to live her life with her person and her baby.
And I think that she, you know, it's about carving out a spot for herself, right? You know, she's not singing. And Sasha started the meeting by telling Brooklyn how effective she's been on growing the company.
Yes. Yes.
So this is really, it's going to be really interesting, but it also speaks to her heart, you know, and it hurting, you know, like this whole idea about, it's real. Maxie's not there right now, right? And she's out in the world and she has a daughter. That's your identity. That's your identity. You're a mother and you have a daughter and her name is Bailey. And I think that is so, so hard. I think it's really, really difficult because she's getting in deeper. Like we finally saw that, you know, she's trying so hard to just play pretend by actually keeping her distance, but it's getting harder and harder the more she's out in the world and back at work. She has to be living that identity all the time, not just at home. So I think this is going to be excruciating for everyone when it comes to Bailey.
Oh my God, I can't even think about it because it breaks my heart.
Yeah. Okay, so speaking of Brooklyn, there was a close call earlier in the week when with Nina. So Brooklyn, you know, decides to call Nina. Nina thinks it's business. And I loved watching Nina freak out, not knowing what to do, right? Can we just do a voice call? Like, do I really have to show my face? Like, the whole thing was just so funny to me. And then not to mention Carly shows up. Who are you talking to, Wiley? And I loved it. Oh, wait, the phone went dead. Like, when Mike starts to ask what's going on. I just thought it was so insane. Like, we talked about this. Like, can you just cross over now? Can you just commit to this? Like, yes. Like, what's happening here? Like, what's happening? Like, this is, it's like, it's getting so real. It's getting so real.
Well, so real that, you know, Brooklyn brings into the conversation, like, wasn't that weird the way Nina was acting? Mm-hmm. Why don't you go see her and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh, I never thought about that because I'm in love with Anna. Anna, oh my God, I watched too much Frozen.
But that's the thing. He's in love with Anna, but then he totally straight up flirts with Brooklyn this week.
Right? Oh my God. He's just like, I look at him sometimes when the screen is on, I'm like, I'm giggling. And he's not even talking to me.
I know. He's such a flirty flirt. Oh, what did she say? I had to look it up because I'm like, is this a reference to like another soap opera? But like, just how to Brooklyn that Nina is in such a random town. She said Bedford Lake and Valentine had to correct her to say it was Nixon Falls. Like, she doesn't care. But that's the thing. Like, I wonder, right? Given like, Valentine's focus on his baby, flirting with Brooklyn and, you know, pushing things with Anna, pushing that friendship line with Anna. Will he care enough to go find Nina?
Honestly, like once he said that line to Brooklyn, I think he said she is the single greatest impulse that he ever acted on. I was like, forget Nina who?
Exactly. Exactly. I think it's one of those teases of close calls because in the conversation, you know, with Nina and Sunny, it's just that fear that their lives will creep in. Like Sunny starts telling her about Mike.
I know she's freaking out. I'm like, put your face together.
Like this is just so insane. Like, you know, this, like literally he was like, a screen away from his whole life, his whole world. It was just a screen away. And you keep talking about like when he's asking her, like, will you introduce me to your grandson? I'm like, you mean our grandson? Our? This is so bananas to me. It's so insane. I mean, honestly, I find it hilarious watching Nina squirm when Sunny talks about like his memories. Or whether or not he has a family. And like, I'm laughing. I'm like, Nina, are we really going to sit here and pretend you're debating like what to do?
Right.
Like, are we really going to pretend you're debating? You're just like, oh, uncomfortable feeling passed so we can make out and so it can feel right. Like, that's all that's going on, right? Just a little discomfort that she's hoping will like gas. She's like, it'll pass. Like, that's what's going on for her. Because like, I don't know. I just can't, like, I'm literally in shock whenever I see those scenes.
When I see her, I picture like, remember the old school, like Etch-a-Sketch and you draw something on there and then you shake it and everything disappears.
Yeah.
That's Nina's brain.
I have to say, I know that storyline frustrates a lot of people, but like, now that it's getting so like worlds could collide, right? And I know it's not happening as quick as anybody wants, but that's what makes it so damn funny for me is watching Nina freak out. It's every time she's about to get close, because like she likes Mike and it feels right to be with him. Her whole world in Nixon Fall feels right, but it's just the fact that she always has that look on her face like, do you know me? Like, do you recognize me? Do you? It's the fact that she's always checking. She's always tentative. And that kills me. It makes me laugh every single time I see it. I just find it so amazing. Because in my head, I'm like, where do you even go from here? Like, I can't even think 10 steps ahead because I'm like, this is so insane. And I love it. I'm like, keep building on this insanity because it's like, I can't wait. Like, it's going to be so explosive when this comes out because it's so insane. It's so insane.
It is. And I think the Tano, like, they've turned it into a comedy show because even like a small little nugget of like, okay, when Phyllis walks in and she's like, Lenny's not coming home. They're like, oh my God, he's dead. And she's like, no, he just had an allergic reaction to the medication.
But it is. But it totally is. It totally is. It's kind of like, okay, like you said, Michael, Willow, and Chase, they're like a spinoff of a light soap opera, okay? Yes. And then the Tano is like the extreme funny version poking fun at soap operas is what that is. And it's so good. Like the fact that General Hospital has shows within a show is next level to me.
Keeps me interested, keeps me fully entertained. Like, I couldn't be able to handle, like, it was all dramatic and all intense all the time. And I don't know why I made, like, a Kermit the Frog voice in the middle of that. But I'm loving all of this. And the Tano's just hilarious. Like, I actually, like, I'm okay with watching the Tano now.
Yes, I do. It's definitely getting funnier. But, like, when you talked about, like, all the drama, like, celebrates that, like, old school drama. Like, it makes me laugh because it's, like, no one wants the drama. But Stella's like, no, I'm going to bring it whether you want it or not. Like, even if we're just meant to say hi, I'm going to turn it into something. I'm going to make you feel like a horrible human. Like, I just couldn't with this woman. So, like, first off, with Curtis, you know, like Trina walks in and they're like, oh my God, come and dine with us. And I'm like, first off, Portia kind of said to lay off with the dinners. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, she didn't want to do couple dinners with Trina, but she's all like, let's just be a you and me thing and let's like ease her into this. But you know, Curtis is Curtis and he has an idea of how things would go. It's painful that he's sometimes right about the whole lying thing sometimes.
Yes.
But my heart broke for Trina having to hear things in like the worst of ways, like the worst way. And Stella, like when she's talking to Portia, what I loved was that Portia was able to go toe to toe with her. But yes. It finally hit her. Like, I'm a grown woman. If I want to make my mistakes, I'm going to make them like butt out. But it's the fact that she went to her work to do it. Cause it's not like Stella works there. But even if she did, it's not the place to have that conversation. But that she felt that was okay. That was insane to me.
Her judgment, the entire, like, it was just really, really messed up. And then when
so
she...
So funny, though.
It was so funny. Like, the fact that, like, Trina runs away and then she sees her. It's like something snapped in her, like, oh, my God, are humans that are affected. And then, obviously, we know what happens next. But it's like... Okay, so when you were talking to Portia, you're just so disconnected that you think, like, what, in this universe, only Portia and Curtis exist and that nobody else is affected by what's coming out of your mouth right now?
Well, yeah, she's just vilifying Portia. She's not saying Portia the full human. She's not saying Portia the doctor, the mother, the friend, none of that. And the fact that she's so special that when she sees, oh my gosh, there's consequences to my actions and that Trina got hurt and she was like, oh my God, let me go after her. I was like, what? I love that Portia immediately was like, don't go near my child. And it's like, but for real, what would you have said? Like, what would you have said to Trina? After everything you just said to Portia, what on earth would you have said to Trina? You know, I'm really sorry you had to hear that your mother's a whore. I felt that it was hard to know. Like, what would you have said to this girl? Because it would require you, you know, maybe apologizing, helping her see things in a different way so it doesn't seem as bad. It would require you speaking kindly of Portia.
Yes. And now she has no choice, though, because Portia is her doctor.
I know how how perfect, you know, like how everything just ends up happening. But the thing is, it's like, okay, I love Portia, you know, I think she's funny. I think she's like a nerd mom. Like she's such a mom sometimes. Yeah. I love her relationship with Trina. We kind of talked about like how it echoes a little bit, you know, Carly and Joss have a really nice relationship, but so does Portia and Trina. Right. And it's nice to see. And so what I love about Portia is the boundary she sets with Trina. And I absolutely love when she explained to Trina that she's a grown woman and she's not obliged to tell her anything about her life at all. So
I love that because, I mean, I have things that I will have to explain to my children, but I'm like, do I have to?
No, you don't. And like, we love, you know, Trina, with her friends, we kind of say she's really, really mature and all that stuff. But this is one of those moments where she's acting like a child, you know, and frankly, I would have said something different if I was younger. But being a mother now, I'm just like, see, Trina, you're not acting your age. Like, I love that Portia was like, tell you were a child at the time. It's not like you were always 18. Right?
Exactly.
But even at 18, she still doesn't have that experience of how complicated a romantic relationship can be. Right. Yes. And I loved how she used Taggart, right? Also pointing the finger, but using Taggart as an example to say things are more gray, right? More complicated and not just black and white. And that was one of her first sort of adult-ish things where she had to understand it wasn't so simple of right and wrong. And as much as Trina says, I hate it when adults say that, it's so complicated. Well, I'm like, well, that's what makes you a kid though, is the fact that you don't get that. And it's not just an excuse. And I like that she used that Taggart example. You had to learn that there's sometimes so many things at play here. And that things are not so simple. And, you know, what Trina doesn't realize is that when adults say that, it's because most adults have experienced being 18 plus. They know what comes after 18. And that's why they say that. So, I mean, I found in that moment, you know, she was acting like a kid, rightfully so, because her whole idea of her family just got shattered in her mind.
And I agree with everything you're saying. Can you explain to me the confusing situation that happened with Jordan and Curtis and how much Stella got into her head? What happened? That whole scene, my mouth was on the floor.
Okay, so I found that hilarious that suddenly Curtis is like, he's piecing things together in his head, that now he's perceptive. It's when he goes, you wouldn't have signed it if you didn't think I was moving on. And I'm like, oh my God, like how many times did Jordan try to work things out with you? How many times did she say she didn't want the divorce?
Yeah.
And how, you know what I mean? You basically told her you were done. Like you gave her no room. You gave her no room. Why would you be surprised that Jordan didn't want this or wanted to work things out?
Like, oh, there's, and Jordan, like, I love her, but I was really surprised that she was going for this one last shot. I thought she was more over it than that. And even Curtis's responses should have let Jordan know, like, Yeah, I should have never brought this up.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, look, we know that Curtis moved on and we certainly know he can like say no to Jordan, right? We know that. Yeah. I guess, look, I think she was honest. I think Stella got to her and that's Jordan, right? She did that one last ditch effort. I guess for me with Jordan, I love her. She could do no wrong to me. So I don't know. I guess I just take her at her word because that's her character, right? She's not mysterious. So she was blunt about it. Like, yeah, Stella hounded me to the point that maybe I thought that I should tell you what was really on my mind. And so then I did. and she was perfectly comfortable having that be, in my head, her only fight. Her own, you know what I mean? Her last ditch effort. And I think if she needs that to walk away, to know for sure, then cool. But even her conversation with Portia, I kind of liked it, you know? Like, I like that Jordan was respectful in the end. Yes. You know, I like that she cut the crap and was like, look, I know. I saw. Like, you're with my husband. Like, how do you expect me to react? You know? Mm-hmm. Like, I like you, but it's obviously hard right now for us to, like, chill and hang out and talk about this. It's weird. It's just weird. Like, even if she didn't have feelings for Curtis, I think she would just need to take a beat because it would be weird, like too close for comfort when you're trying to like move on from your life kind of a thing. But I liked it. That whole scene, like Portia just looked shocked a lot. She seemed to have a lot of shocked looks on her faces. Anyways, hopefully those two can be friends sometime down the line. But, you know, I thought it was very classy how Jordan was when she was basically like, maybe not right now. And I wish you the best. And then she turned around and asked Curtis, would you dump Portia and try with me a little bit?
That's the funny thing, like, and that's Jordan, and that's what makes her so awesome, is that she is just going with what she's feeling in that moment. I do see her and Portia eventually being friends. And yeah, she got her closure conversation with Curtis. But I did think about you when that Curtis Jordan conversation was happening at Kelly's, because simultaneously, so they're in Kelly's and they're having this big conversation outside. Trina and Spencer are sitting, and this is all supposed to be happening at the same time. Those scenes were played kind of like at the same time. And then Jordan walks out. Wouldn't Trina have stopped, or wouldn't there have been some sort of interaction? So I thought that was
100%.
I thought editing wise, too. I thought about you talking about like secret door. There was an invisible door.
Was there
door,
a force field? Right? I mean, I get
that's the word I was looking for.
Well, Jordan was upset, and you can tell Trina definitely was too. So there you have Spencer being a human.
Oh my God, right? For like one time since you got here.
Yeah. So it's really interesting because it's like, again, these are very young characters. A lot's happened to Joss and Cam, you know, since they've been kids. We've actually watched them develop during their teen years, but Spencer, we haven't. We know him as a kid who lost his mother. We literally don't know until right now what the impact of his history has actually been on him as a person now. And so it's really interesting watching how his experience with Courtney, you know, is influencing where he's at and also the things he'll say, right? Yes. To Trina about her mother, even though he did, you know, reference his dad too, you know, all the time, lost. So it's interesting to see that real part of Spencer. Spencer's really sweet, he wants to be, and I think that's the point, right? That's the side of himself that he doesn't necessarily show to, like, everyone else, you know, especially when you watch the way he talks and treats Cameron, which is interesting because they're family, you know, and it was so fun watching Laura deal with her grandbabies.
Yes.
That's how I see them. It was so crazy to see, right? Because it's like nothing's ever changed about their dynamics as children up until this point. So, you know, Spencer's a jerk pretty much to everyone else, still pulling the whole same shtick he always has. But you can see clearly how Trina would fall for him when he's that way.
Oh, 100%. She gets to see the soft side. Like, she hears Joss and Cam, and that's where that rift may come in, because she gets to see a different side to him entirely when they're alone.
Okay. So, about these guys. So, you mentioned earlier that Joss sort of suggested to Cam, you know, hey, Trina's your friend too. Maybe she'd listen to you. And so, you know, I mentioned earlier some examples between, like, Joss and Spencer that makes you wonder, okay, is there like a Joss Spencer thing that might happen that would cause a wedge between, let's say, her and Cam, or the fact that, like, you know, Joss and Trina have liked the same boy, which was Cam, and now you have Spencer coming in, and that's sort of the Joss Trina dynamic. And then I started thinking there could be a little swap, you know? We talk about the fact that, like, the Cam and Trina thing was stopped out of nowhere. Well, what if, you know, Cam and Trina start talking a little bit more? What if Cam is supportive, or, I don't know, talks to her about his concerns about Spencer and they're spending time together? And at the end of the day, there are similarities between Joss and Spencer. They both come from money. They both, you know, have a certain life that they're used to.
They handle dark stuff really well. And Cam and Trina are still kind of normies navigating this poor Charles life. And yeah, I can definitely see how that could happen.
I can definitely see some kind of swap down the line. But obviously, I think more needs to be cemented between Trina and Spencer first before Joss might be a bit more jealous. I don't even know if that's the word, but you know how Joss gets
competitive.
Yes, exactly. Competitive. So something else might need to happen there. But I think things are going to get interesting with these four for sure.
Well, with these four, and especially, like, I don't know if Laura's catching on to Spencer or anybody's catching on to how he says things and how he refers to people, how he refers to Ava. He was talking so weird about Kevin. Like, what, you know, like, if Trina starts falling for him and then all this comes out, like, they have to kind of be already in a solid relationship, or something has to, like, progress further. It's going to take a little bit longer for all that stuff to come out. But I'm wondering if Laura is going to be wise to him, and then how that's going to affect that teenage foursome and the rest of the people who'll be judging Spencer.
Oh my gosh, it's definitely gonna blow up. You know, it's really funny because we talked about lies coming out, and we talked about Chase, you know, when things come out, it's like drama light, but it's funny because with the teens, it is a bit more dramatic and the story touches on a lot more adult storylines.
That's so true.
meanwhile, Chase, Willow, and Michael are supposed to be an adult storyline. This is why I'm so in awe of the kids, because again, I don't recall it was always like this, but I find that with this particular crew that we have, I find that their storylines weave seamlessly into the adult storylines, that they're really, to me, isn't a teen storyline. I don't see teens, when, especially last week, and I said this with last Wednesday's episode, particularly a conversation between Joss and Trina. Remember, I wouldn't want to be on your bad side, Joss says to Trina, which is obviously foreshadowing, but nothing about their conversations strikes me as teen-like. Even if you look at the private conversation between Joss and Cam before entering the Quartermain house, how many times have we seen adults do that? That was not a teen conversation.
True. Very true.
So that's why I'm in awe of this particular like teen group, because they're just so freaking spectacular. And that is the issue with Spencer. So much would be blown up. You know what I mean? Like things about Spencer coming out will be so much more devastating than any truth that comes out between Willow, Michael, and Chase.
He will be the first teen pariah?
Yeah, I think that could be very true. He could be the first teen pariah, 100%. It was bad. Like when Spencer, the comment he made toward Cameron, like he was such a jerk. And then when you hear Laura explaining to Cameron, like, hey, what is the matter with you that you have no idea what your cousin has been through? Like, right? and like she says, you know, hopefully you can have something to focus on. I'm like, he's had a project to focus on for some time now, but he's at Cassadine. So that project is vengeance, you know, like he's not your typical teen. He has not lived a typical life, but yeah, I do think that Laura will pick up on this. She's very in tune with her grandkids. Right. And so I think it's going to be hard for whoever figures that out, not to mention Ava and Nicholas found the letter.
The letter from the jail letter, right?
The Spencer, you know, the Spencer Ryan exchange, except in this instance, it's a letter written to Spencer from Ryan that went unopened. But the point is yes. There was some kind of contact. So that letter is found. So it's hard to know who will kind of put this together first. And will it be too late? Because if Ava's got a bodyguard... That feels nice. You know, all this could be for nothing.
Okay. So getting to the jail where, you know, some of the stuff is coming together, I actually, in a tiny bit of a moment, appreciated Harmony just ever so kindly leaving the file behind and loudly announcing that she'll be back in 20 minutes so they can look at the files.
See? Little steps.
That's an appropriate step to create trust with Alexis and Nicholas. Like, take that into the real world.
I know, right? I know. Oh my gosh. Okay, so again, it's kind of funny watching Sam and Nicholas together because it feels like Sam hates everyone and sometimes likes some people. So. But she had an interesting, it was an interesting edit today of the show. You have Sam, you know, a little bit of Sam with Nicholas, you know, some Sam with Elizabeth today. And obviously she's going to be part of that whole investigation, right? She's working with Sean to find out what happened to Hayden. And yes. Hayden's mother, which might have seen even, I don't know, maybe once before on the show.
Okay,
like shows up out of nowhere. I have to admit, I love how Finn doesn't try to hide his annoyance like at all. Like
love with him.
With this woman. But the interesting thing about Sam's you know, being featured today was how she was sort of subtly featured in Dante's piece today.
I really like that because Sam has shifted in terms of her character and she has become in many of these situations the voice of reason. Like she
really
like
was, okay
well in the sense that just follow me along on this
yeah journey. I'm with you.
So let's say okay, so with Nicholas, you know, he's the hothead right now, she's the level-headed one. She understood where Harmony was coming from. She was the one with the calm demeanor trying to piece everything together. You know, in the situation with Elizabeth, she's building that wonderful friendship. She even made a joke, you know, as she walked in, Elizabeth shared information for her. She called Sean, like she might actually solve a case like in an actual way that's real and no danger.
No, I look, I do like Sam building her own life, you know, yes. And I love the fact that her social life seems pretty rich, right? You know, she's not kind of roaming the world alone. She has her people, right? She's got Sean, she's got they show her a lot with Nicholas and Alexis. She has Elizabeth, you know, she has Dante. Like, I love it. You know, she has the Quartermain. So I like that. I like it when people kind of are more rooted and have, you know, as many connections as possible. And it was just, it felt heavy and bittersweet, you know, that whole, like the implication basically of Sam and Dante.
Yeah,
it was hard, you know, that conversation with Laura. And I could not have been more grateful that he had the conversation with Laura because Lulu is not here to be like, it's okay. And I think having Laura tell him it's okay is like everything.
Oh, I mean, she's the mom of all moms. Like, she's incredible. Yes. everything she has to say is gold and wisdom, and he needed to hear from her. Like, obviously, like he said, his mom brought up some things for him, but when Laura said it, it just had a different impact for him.
I totally agree with Laura being the mom of all moms. Like, she had a talk with Maxie, you know, she's having a talk with Dante, she has talks with her grandkids. Like, you know, she's everywhere. She's a mayor. She's definitely a mayor.
She is. So I do look forward to Dante and Sam starting something, but exactly that, there's that heaviness and knowing what he's letting go of.
Exactly. Okay, so not the same thing, but with Britt, this is kind of what I noticed, and I really hope it's not going in that direction.
Okay.
Because the one thing you said about Britt in particular is that, look, if things don't work out with Jason, which they inevitably won't, because again, if you can't be a part of the life and make the life your life, it's not going to work. It just won't. And so when, like you said, that if things don't work out with Britt, she'll just move on, right? She won't linger. She won't pine. She'll just set those boundaries and move on. And I was just a little concerned because when she left off with Jax, she was like, keep me posted if you know why Jason is marrying Carly. And I was like, no, please don't do this to her character. You know, please, like, because we're seeing her day-to-day being a struggle.
Yes, we are.
As a result of her heartbreak. Like, I'm glad she's making headway with Terry because I think it'd be nice for her, because I know it's hard for her to not have Jason, and that's to not have that romantic relationship or the start of it is obviously extremely disappointing and heartbreaking. But I'm hoping that, you know, having this relationship with Terry might make her more connected to the hospital and other people. You know what I mean? Like, Terry will hold her hand and be like, come, be human with me, okay? This is what it is to have relationships. Like, I'm hoping Terry will just guide Britt. Remember, Terry was the one pushing Portia, being like, no, we're going to Savoy. We're not going to other lame places. I'm going. If you want to come, meet me. What are you afraid of? So I feel like Terry is exactly what Britt needs, and I'm hoping that happens before Britt goes down a really weird road that a lot of women on the show have gone in before, and I just don't want that.
I totally agree. Like, I do want her to be the gateway to her friendships, and I want her to build that rich, so kind of like Sam, you know, like we saw Sam go through this terrible path of like losing herself and, you know, basically pining for Jason. They would totally freaking bond, and they would be kick-ass friends.
They need drinks. Those four need drinks. No, and Portia, she also works at the hospital. They need drinks. So much. Oh my gosh, I would do anything to have a fun scene like that.
Right? So that's what I'm hoping for too. I do not want to see her become weak and wanting Jason back or plotting to get him back. Like, I want none of that.
Right? At least just deal with it with your friends and not so much to Jason anymore and try to build her life. I want her to do that, right? Because her life needs to go beyond just the hospital.
Exactly. Like, broaden her circle and her surroundings for sure.
So, look, do you think Obrecht brought up Peter to cover her tracks?
Oh, my God. I was watching that scene so intensely. I rewound. I looked at expressions, you know, trying to capture. And honestly, I couldn't freaking tell.
No. But then I told myself that Obrecht would be that good.
That's true, though. And that's what I thought as well.
But I don't know. But that's what I want to believe.
But then she said, like, Anna, you're talking about this case in the present tense or something like that. But I also think, like, she was inquiring poking slash trying to figure out how much Anna knows. So I'm like, okay, is she, like, on a recon mission? Is she just, like, covering her butt? Like, what is happening? I don't know.
That's what I think. But I also love their whatever they've got going on.
Love it.
Like, their banter, everything. I don't know. It's just amazing.
Can you just answer me, why did Anna show up at the gym in a blazer with a smoothie in the first place? Like, did Obrecht call her to come down? Like, I was so confused at the beginning of that scene.
I wish I knew. I really wish I knew, because I'm like, she's working out in that. And she's, you know, inserting herself in whatever is going on between Jason and Obrecht. Nope, you're right. This is a complete mystery as to why she showed up like that. And also, to me, what's up with the smoothie bar conversation?
Right. I'm like, is there going to be one at the gym? That's cool. More people.
Exactly. Like, I'm really confused, because I'm like, I hope there's no changes to Kelly's. Because Kelly's is a staple, right? You see Cameron back working there. You see all these significant characters. But then towards the end of the week, you see freaking Novak sitting out there.
Yes, yes.
Oh, talking about the place, right? Mm-hmm. And the fact that Jason, and then Liesl said something about, you know, the schnitzels that they make. And then, you know, she makes a comment about the smoothies, about at least Kelly's doing something right. And then later Jason was like, Joey wasn't like phased, like he might have allies. And that kind of freaked mm-hmm. me out. But I'm like, what does Kelly's have to do with this? Is something going down with the BLTs? Like, I'm so scared. But I just thought it was so weird to get into a whole smoothie conversation. Like, yeah, what is that?
I don't know, but I just love their friendship though. Like, the fact that, you know, they held the punching bag for each other. And then, you know, she's like, I didn't know that you box. She's like, well, I do like to hit things. Like, I just love their camaraderie.
I love those normal moments, right? I know right now nothing is extra dramatic, but I really am living for these kinds of interactions. I really am. Like, just cementing of relationships, developing of relationships, development of characters. Like, I don't know. I'm loving that.
Another thing I loved at the gym and was shirtless Brando. I don't really know what he said and what he talked about, but I know that he wasn't wearing a shirt for a while.
Oh my gosh. Should we just go to favorite scenes? Because mine is related to the gym as well.
Let's do it.
So, favorite scene? Jason's push-ups, unnecessary, but amazing and more than welcomed. I'm like, look at that, up and down, without like, that's like with ease. I was like, that is my favorite moment, gold star. You're going to get that for me, for sure.
Oh my God. Okay, so definitely gold star to the gym between shirtless, Brando, Jason doing push-ups. And one of my favorite lines was Jason to Cam, punch with your head, not your heart. Like, that's like some life advice right there.
Okay, I'm sorry. Does that not echo something more? Like, what is happening? They're just highlighting Joss is Carly, Cam is Jason. How long have they been doing the Cam is Jason thing on the show?
I know, right?
how many, like, seriously, I've gone back and seen old clips where mm-hmm. you see, you know, Cam huddled with Jason Sunny or huddled with Jason. How, like, you know what I mean? Like, how many mm-hmm. times has, like, Cameron gone off? Again, remember, teenager, having a, you know what I mean? Like, having these meetups and conversations with Jason. Like, I don't know. That's there for me. That's there. So, like, something, you know?
Well, we're going to see how this all plays out, because Joss is obviously heavily banking on the fact that, you know, her mom and Jason have been friends forever and now they're in love. And she, you know, kind of puts that on top of her and Cam, that everything's going to be dandy because we're friends.
I know. But I, like, for me, what I think is really cool is just, you know, watching them sort of, you know, set up the next generation as well. And, you know, when I look at Cam, I always look at that line of where is he going to fall and which side of the mob, basically, is when I look to Cam to wonder what's going to happen with him, right?
I know, because they, like, tease, I mean, us, that's so much.
They do, because ultimately that was sort of the path of his father, right? You know, darkness or light. And his father came back and had that conversation. So anyways, like, I'm just very enthralled with these little nuggets of Cam and looking for hints and clues as to where all these characters are going to fall when it comes to the mob down the line.
Right, he might be a mob doctor. We don't know. We want TJ to be a detective doctor or a lawyer detective doctor.
And a mob doctor to his buddy Brando.
Oh, right.
And also, okay. Also, TJ had one of my favorite lines.
Okay.
So Stella is a jerk to everyone, but then she has a stroke, and so she wakes up and everyone's apologizing to her, you know, because mm-hmm. everybody had a conflict with her. Basically. And so then when Portia apologizes, TJ goes, add my mom to the apology tour. Because they also had an argument in their last conversation. And I love here where they're trying to make the divorce like a drama. Like, Stella can't remember the envelope. But I'm like, I don't know. Is it really that dramatic? Because Curtis says, I don't care about the divorce as long as we're on the same page. So to him, it doesn't really matter. Of course, it'll be shocking to find out, like, months and months and months later, you've been married the whole time. And who knows where Jordan will be by then. But, I mean, I don't know. It's not that dramatic, but I find they're trying to make it be like it's a big deal. But then I'm kind of wondering, is something going to happen that's going to make it a big deal, though? Like, is something going to happen to, like, Curtis where somebody has to make a decision and then it turns out Jordan still gets a say? Like, I don't know. You know what I mean? I don't know. But, like, they're making it seem dramatic that I'm thinking, how, considering everybody seems to be on the same page about Curtis's relationship status. But at the same time, too, like, he's always quick to blame Jordan whenever anything goes wrong. But, like, all you need to do is, well, you know, Stella was at my office when I put them in the thing. And I like, that should be everybody's clue as to what happened to those papers.
Right. Like, oh my goodness. Okay. So do you have any more favorite lines?
To me, it was just the Joss thing. And we talked about that. So Joss kind of saying it's family business. That mm-hmm. to me, again, super striking because it speaks to like the potential future of Joss.
Love it.
Okay, to some degree.
Exactly. Okay, so I do have a few quick lines here. So when Nicholas, Sam, and Alexis were together, they're talking about the whole Ryan situation, and Alexis says psychopaths are notoriously patient. For some reason, that really did it for me. I loved it. Okay. there was the scene when Michael and Willow and Chase are all together at the Quartermain house. You know, Chase is trying to play it cool or whatever. And he looks at Michael and he says, nice to have a true buddy that could step in when I can't. I'm like, ba-dum-tsh.
oh my gosh, how could I forget this? I was creeped out when Chase asked for a kiss after.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it was so weird.
I was so creeped out. I was like, oh. And then, like, you know, he got all mad. So he, like, reeled back. He's like, nah, I'm not going to take that kiss. And I was like, okay, Chase, you show them with your anger.
You're so crazy.
I know. You're doing her a favor.
Anyways. It's so crazy. Okay. And then I think it was like Monday, like right at the beginning before she, Jordan bumps into Portia, they were at the hospital and they're talking about like forensic and stuff like that. And this made me laugh because she said, I would put my money on our forensic team any day of the week.
Aww, but
she'll put all her money on it.
Cute.
So she still has confidence in her team, which is fantastic, but makes me giggle immensely. We give out our gold stars, of course, a gold star to Sean and Ava. Love that interaction immensely, and I am all on board for your stars as well. And oh my gosh, we did all of the things.
Yes,
fantastic. Okay, peoples, have a wonderful weekend, and that's a wrap for this week. See ya.
Bye.